Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Eileen Cha. Hair discrimination targets Black people, especially Black women, and that's been true since they were allowed to enter the workforce. Policies around hair have put Black students out of classrooms and kept Black employees from jobs or career advancement. In 2019, a study by Dove found that a Black woman is 80% more likely than a non-Black woman to change her natural hair to meet social norms or work expectations. And a 2021 study, also by Dove, found that 66% of Black girls in majority white schools experienced hair discrimination. In recent years, lawmakers ranging from federal to municipal levels have worked to ban hair discrimination with what is called the Crown Act. Crown is an acronym which means create a respectful and open workplace for natural hair, and the first act of its kind was passed in the state of California in 2019. Since then, other states and municipalities have adopted their own measures. The Crown Act went into effect in 2021 in the city of St. Louis, and a statewide measure in Illinois took effect this past January. Missouri has yet to pass a similar law. Here to talk about local and statewide efforts to ban hair discrimination and the personal journey many Black people travel to embrace and love their own natural hair, we have Leslie Hughes, founder and CEO of the St. Louis nonprofit Frizzy by Nature and FrizzFest. Leslie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We also have Gabrielle Hayes, communities correspondent for PBS NewsHour based in St. Louis and the vice president of the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists. Gabrielle, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Now, Leslie, let's go back to summer of 2017 when you and your family held the first ever FrizzFest. Tell us what FrizzFest is and what inspired you to put it together.
So FrizzFest is a natural beauty festival. It was created to encourage self-love and inspire confidence among women. That really is the mission for our nonprofit, Frizzy by Nature. So FrizzFest is the movement behind that. It really pushes our mission forward. And I really came up with the idea for FrizzFest. It's kind of tenfold. A lot of things involved that decision, but a lot of it was I had experienced a lot of loss in my life, family members, including my mom. So just in a dark place, and just my mom being my biggest cheerleader and always just that confidence boost and, you know, I'm pretty, I'm so smart. So losing that, for obvious reasons, went into a form of depression, self-hate, lost, passionless. I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing with my life. But prior to, I had went natural, my natural hair, and I had really got into the natural hair movement. So kind of, I think all those things came together, and I sat down with my brother and sister on the couch. It was New Year's Day. We were writing out our resolutions, and I first said I wanted to just have a short conversation with women and then to talk about natural hair and products, tips, trips, and tricks to take care of your natural hair. But then decided, I was like, no, let's do something bigger.
Yeah.
Let's do something in the park. And I thought, like, you know, a handful of people will show up and St. Louis
show
up.
Many handfuls, yeah.
Yeah.
And what does going natural mean?
So from a young age, I got what we call relaxers or perms, to chemically straighten my hair. From when I can't remember when I got my first one. I think I was like second, third grade.
Mm.
So I ended up going natural because I was graduating from college and I went to a new beautician and she cut a lot of my hair off and I was able to see my natural curl pattern.
Oh.
And so I waited a few months later and cut all of my chemically straightened hair. And then for the first time back then, I felt like I was finally myself.
Yeah. So that first FrizzFest that came together, how did that feel for you insofar as the reaction that you got from people who were there celebrating
yeah.
the same thing?
It really just showed me I was doing the right thing. I was on the right path, just for me to it by far exceeded my expectations. So I knew from right then it was something that was needed and necessary in St. Louis. People had been like yearning for a type of event like that. So it really just pushed me to keep going.
Mm-hmm. So because of the loved ones that I have, you know, friends who are like family,
yep.
I know that, you know, black hair can be a contentious subject, one that causes a lot of consternation, you know, anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true not only for black women, but also for black girls.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who are not aware of that because of the relationships that they have, why has natural black hair been a sore spot in conversation, even among black folks?
I think, well, a lot of it, I think it's a lot of just society and what we see on TV and in the media. And from, I know me, a young age, special holidays, get your hair straight, you know, get curls or make sure your hair is done. And natural was unruly, it was messy, unkept, and I don't, that's not even from white society, but also within the black community as well.
Sure.
So, and then just, you know, black women especially, we do all different types of hairstyles, whether it's natural or braids that I have now. I don't know, it's always like a feeling if you're entering a new space, like being able to be exactly who you are, there's a weird kind of feeling about that because you don't know how people are going to feel about it or take it, and you don't want to go into the workspace and get a million questions of how your hair is like that and things like that. So I think it starts not only from what we see or what, but it also what we've been taught from our peers.
Right. Now, Gabrielle, I mentioned at the top the Crown Act, and you've reported on the Crown Act. Most recently was this summer, mm-hmm. around efforts on the state level to ban discriminatory policies against black hair and also about municipal efforts right here in St. Louis. Paint a picture for us about how black hair discrimination shows up specifically in schools.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think most of us have seen the videos of children having to cut their hair off to participate in a sport, or you see the videos of a teacher cutting off a kid's hair in the classroom, right? And so these are things that we have seen happen in recent years, right? With young people either in the classroom or just trying to participate as a child in playing a game. But I think, you know, as Leslie notes, you know, when we talk about hair discrimination, as you say, you know, we're not just talking about the experience of how we show up in workplaces, but when, it starts when we enter the classroom, mm-hmm. right? Whether that's, as she noted, people touching your hair or commenting on your hair, or us changing our hair in hopes that those things won't happen to us, maybe to be a little more palatable to the people around us. So, I mean, you know, we see it in multiple ways, right? Whether that is from your classmates or policy, right? Mm-hmm. So there are instances not only, you know, across the country where we have policy that has very specific language that says that your hair has to be a certain type of way. And so you ask the question, well, who are those policies for? Or what are those words actually mean? Or on the flip side, we have instances where it's so vague to the point where, you know, institutions can get away with anything, right? So I think that it varies, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that it happens at all levels. We learn this experience from a young age in the classroom, and it's something that you experience even when you step out of that classroom door.
Yeah, and I think when we think about classroom, we do think of young students, but this is applicable also at the college level. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about people who are adults by law. An example of vague wording is this idea about hair being kept clean, trimmed, and groomed. Mm-hmm. And that comes directly from what's found in the dress appearance policy for Rankin Technical College, which is just down the street. And that was from their 2020-2021 handbook. Mm-hmm. You find similar language in the City of Brentwood's employee handbook. And another phrase that pops up is quote, not extreme in design or fashion. Mm-hmm. Mm. So how slippery a slope is that from the perspective of you, Gabrielle, since you've done some reporting around that? What have people told you about that?
You know, when you hear those words, you can't help but just have to take a breath, because the question is like, what does that mean and who exactly are you talking about? Because then when we get into the space where we start asking the questions, we have to have an honest conversation. And so it feels like those words, it feels like whether the words are outright said or made in a vague way, that they, in a way, leave the door open for there to be discrimination toward people of color, towards Black people. Mm-hmm. And so we have to think about what that language is and what it means and the real life effects that it has on human beings. And we've seen that not just the push for guidance around this type of language, not just nationally, but on a state level and also on a local level mm-hmm. as well.
Leslie, those you have met through your work with Frizzy by Nature and FrizzFest, how many of them have stories that reflect the struggles that they have had around vagueness with policies?
Yeah, I think more than not of women, more specifically Black women, have had experiences in the workplace with yep. discrimination against their hair. And discrimination, I mean, it could be anything from you know, being pulled into the office, or again, like, the questions and is that your real hair, or can I touch it, or how long did it take to get like that, or just like things like that, because it's still a setting that makes you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And then I think the sad part is about natural hair is that it is our natural hair. So right. It's naturally who we are.
Yeah.
So being told that who we are as ourselves is not good enough. Mm-hmm. And to think, yes, in the workplace, but back to the classroom, what, you know, at a young age, what that could do to someone from a young age. And I think that that's, you know, it's really harmful.
Yeah.
So, I think it's an everyday experience. I mentioned, I still feel uncomfortable in certain spaces. I've just had to learn that this is who I am, take it or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Gabrielle, you are a journalist who is on screen. Mm-hmm. Have you been told at any point that your hair is extreme or not groomed or even unprofessional when it was just in its natural state or in a protective style like braids?
Oh, man. I feel like Leslie gave a good like recap of the different things Black women experience. I think one of my first experiences was when I was interviewing for jobs, I had a recruiter tell me he preferred my hair pushed back.
Mm. Pushed back.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, then, yeah.
What does that mean?
He was trying to imply essentially that he didn't want to see my, he didn't want to see my natural hair, so okay. It would be more presentable.
Oh, like
if my hair was
back
in a ponytail,
or, got
and it.
It
couldn't be seen.
Okay.
And then when I got into more so when I was local, the touching, the touching of my hair, or asking me, was it really mine? Is an uncomfortable experience. But I do think that we have to acknowledge and call it what it is to say that, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that Black women, while Black women face hair discrimination, Black women with 4C hair, experience an overwhelming amount of specific discrimination. And I think that it's important to point that out. 4C hair is a thicker textured hair.
Yeah. 4C?
4C.
Okay.
It's a hair texture. And I think that we have to call it what it is. So have I experienced hair discrimination? Yes, but I think that I have to acknowledge that my Black sisters who have thicker hair have had a really tough experience, not just in the schoolyard, not just in the classroom, but in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to point that out.
And specific to that, Gabrielle, what are some of the details within the Crown Act that would prohibit hair discrimination against Black people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, honestly, it depends on the act, right? Because they kind of differ by state, by municipality, by city. Some of them, as we noted, hit on both workplace and in schools. So I think that it runs the gamut, but I think that a lot of it is very specific in the language, making sure that the language is specific so that in these cases where we have opportunity, where there are moments of discrimination, that there is some type of guardrail mm-hmm. for people to turn to say, okay, this is not okay, and here are the guidelines that protect me mm-hmm. in saying so.
So it would be clearer language,
yeah.
not the vague kind right. of stuff that we've talked about. We're speaking with Gabrielle Hayes, a communities correspondent for PBS NewsHour based in St. Louis and the vice president of the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists, and with Leslie Hughes, founder and CEO of the St. Louis nonprofit Frizzy by Nature and FrizzFest. Leslie, talk to us about the different hair textures, because this is yep. something I needed a clarification,
yes.
right? Which textures are most accepted,
okay.
and then which ones are most most closely policed?
Mm-hmm. Exactly what Gabrielle said. So they range from A, B, C are the different, and then there's like 1, 2, 3, and it just the differences are the tightness of the coils, mm-hmm. the kinkiness, and the 4C hair is the most kinkiest texture. So that's like the tighter curls. You know, maybe like draws up a little bit more, and that is a hair texture that is not as accepted as someone with a B.
Yeah.
It's a hair texture. And I think, and I'm glad that that was brought up, because when natural hair kind of started to become a thing in the recent years, you would see a lot of models mm-hmm. with natural hair textures, but it wasn't the 4C hair textures.
Yeah. It was the looser.
Yes.
Okay.
It was the looser hair textures. Where, you know, and I want to say this in the right way, where they could or couldn't, they may or may not be black, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that, and that's a whole nother, you know, topic.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So definitely, and I think that's why there's been such a boom in natural hair care products that really care for all the different hair types. Now we're at a point, thank goodness, that you can go into a Target and find what you need for your hair, but it didn't. This is a really recent thing,
right.
you know, where we're able to go. I can go into any store and find something specifically for my hair. And then that's a lot. I came up in a class I was taking, and you don't realize it. Now I do, but when you go to hotels, the conditioner and the shampoo that they place in those hotels, we cannot use. The black women cannot use that
right.
type of shampoo or conditioner. So I think on all levels, black women are discriminated by, you know, by our hair texture in ways that we don't even realize.
Yeah. So sort of thinking about the local in the context of what is going on elsewhere, the Crown Act has yet to be adopted at a state level in Missouri or at a federal level to protect the entire country, right, against black hair discrimination. But there are some smaller wins that have occurred within different states and even in cities, so St. Louis mm-hmm. and Jackson County, which Kansas City is part of. Gabrielle, are all Crown Acts created equal?
We talked about that a little bit earlier, because, you know, you're talking about a piece of legislation that is being, you know, pushed through in different states by different groups of people with different types of, you know, who maybe wrote them in different ways or for different needs. So they may all look a little bit different, right? We know that some of them, as I said, have both. The idea is that they would have both, you know, protections for you in the workplace and at school.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that, you know, when laws are passed in different states, aren't able to get all of the wins in one bill. So
right.
I think that they do vary a little bit. But, you know, as you noted, right, we don't have one in Missouri. One has not passed both the House and the Senate on a federal level. So we see local cities passing them, carving out spaces within states that haven't passed them in hopes to have those safer spaces. But even to go further, when we talk about Leslie, right? So we're in a state that hasn't passed one. We are in a city that has one. We're
mm-hmm.
close to another one. But still, even to go further than that to say, okay, you know, we're going to create this space where we're not only going to acknowledge it, but we're going to celebrate it. And yeah. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. And I've been toggling back and forth between the two of you and asking about the Crown Act, you know, what is there in law? And then what is it just, you know, to live and exist? Because these things are not separate. They work together. And as you're talking, Gabrielle, about these different places and different policies and laws, I mean, we live in a bi-state region. If you go from one place to another, like you live in St. Louis, outside the city, and you work somewhere in Illinois or vice versa, we're looking at very different policies. Mm-hmm. So with FrizzFest, have you found that people are coming from sort of farther out, like they're drawn to this particular festival, partly because of what's not available elsewhere and because of the differences there are?
Yeah, and I think that, so we have people come from all over, and that's also a continuous goal because we are this really cool, amazing festival with a good cause, and we want people to experience this kind of sort of safe space. But I do think a lot of people come because it literally is a chance to be free and safe with who you are. And you mentioned earlier, and I can't remember the exact wording, no extreme hairstyles or anything like that. We encourage people to come out.
Yes.
And if you want to rock an extreme hairstyle that's purple, pink, blue, yellow, green, this is where you come and be yourself. And I do also stress that FrizzFest is not just a natural hair festival, it's a natural beauty festival. So whatever that means to you, however you want to wear your hair, whether it's natural or weaves or braids, that's where you can come and feel comfortable in doing so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think people come from all over because it's a space for us to be happy and inspired and joyful, being exactly who we are.
Mm-hmm. So the final question, how will you be rocking your hair at FrizzFest? Gabrielle, do you know?
I'm so excited.
Okay.
The first moment I talked to Leslie, I was like, Leslie, I want you to know I'll be at FrizzFest. My curls will be on their best behavior. And if they're not, that's fine too.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put flowers in my hair and I'm going to live my best life and I'm excited.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Leslie?
I don't know. I think I might mix it up a little bit. Yes. I think I'm going to get a little side braid with flowers in it.
Because
I get hot. It's hot that day.
It is.
It's a lot of running around. So I think I'm going to put it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you both so much for talking with me today. Leslie Hughes is founder and CEO of the St. Louis nonprofit Frizzy by Nature and FrizzFest. And Gabrielle Hayes is a communities correspondent for PBS NewsHour, based here in St. Louis, and the vice president of the St. Louis chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet. Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to conservation and careful management of the state's forests to make them more resilient and better habitats for wildlife. ChooseWood.com.